Everybody present, good morning and welcome. Thank you, Minister, once again for your time that you have created for the Select Committee of the Ministry. We really appreciate you and the Deputy Minister for this. Thank you very much, Minister. Honourable members, I hope you are stretched after solar. You're tired, I see that you still got your sonar tired and all that off. Wonderful, some of you are getting good price, like Honorable Abrams, for sonar, Marikali, welcome, and everybody welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, as it is in the committee, we will just quickly introduce ourselves very shortly, so that you know who's who. And that we don't read tomorrow an unknown source of the committee of state that and that. So we know who's who. Let me start on my left, but Honorable Shukar, or let me start on my left. Marikali.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Matipa Bersari. I'm representing the Board of Progress.
Thanks. How are you doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Deputy Minister and the Director General will stay behind and and finish the discussion. And so without wasting much time and without further ado, let me hand over to Melissa to take us through the new growth plan.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson, and again, good morning to the honourable members of the Select Committee, the representatives, the additional representatives of the provinces, and those in the public gallery. I've been asked to share with the Select Committee both in very brief the basic outline of the growth path, but also, very importantly, how we are going to achieve some of what we do. And with your support, Chairperson, I'm going to go into the left side, the left of it, which just allow for easier flow, and try in the presentation to cover both of the contemporary issues for the structure of the growth path. The Deputy Minister of Economic Development will be available. We have an arrangement between us. I do the easy bit, that's a difficult one. So all the hard questions he will be available to take a little bit later. And I really am sorry that I won't be able to say that. Honourable members, Chairperson, really we'd like to share a brief overview of the growth path, address some of the special challenges that flow from the work that we've done, share and hear from members here, honourable members, education for common within the society. And I start with the State of the Nation address, where the President declared 2011 to be a year of job creation for meaningful economic transformation and improvement. He pointed to the new growth path that will guide government's work, working within the premise of the creation of these important centers by economic policy. And very importantly, the President indicated that the challenge of jobs is not confined to one department or in fact one cluster, but will now be the overriding challenge of all government departments who must align their programs with the job creation imperative. We've met with the Premier at the Cabinet Office in January and discussed with him two of the imperatives, and we had representatives of the Patel President. Spoke last year of the Premier in the Presidential COVID-19 Council, and our hope and our intention is to try to ensure that the job creation priority becomes an overriding priority throughout the board. Not only do we want it to be that of the partners, but also the public interest, based on enterprises, development finance, others, we need to talk much more substantially to how they're contributing to job creation, to the economically inclusive growth that underpins job creation. The job challenges we just set out what members know. The first diagram shows the declining job intensity of the economy over the period 1970 to 2009. In real terms, you see a decline in the number of jobs created per billion rand of GDP. The second graph shows the gap between the growth in the working age population, that's the red top line, and the number of people who are actually absorbed in the labor force, that's the bottom gray line. And the third graph shows the labor absorption. Excuse me, the percentage of people aged between 15 and 64 were actually employed. start with South Africa, it was 1.3%. Egypt at 43%. India 55%. Argentina about 10%. South Korea 58%. Malaysia 60%. Brazil is 64%. And China at 71%. Now, what is significant is the size of the challenge. And that in not only the domestic context, but the global context, that is motivated in the treatment of jobs. What is the global context? Again, honorable members of the familiar, living in age, a major realignment globally, the rise of the economic powers, principally China, India, and Brazil. These are the fast growing parts of the global economy. In the midst of recessionary conditions in the global north, we've seen extraordinary economic growth in China and India in particular. It's a new scramble of Africa's resources that has coincided with the rise of these three economic powers. Globally, economic conditions remain somewhat fragile. Many of the imbalances and systemic weaknesses that led to the economic crisis in September 2008 are as yet unresolved. And slow recovery in the global north. Although we see these projections are fairly flat, their growth will be modest in the period ahead. So what the global economic crisis has also done is open up policy space for governments to focus on what is appropriate for their national economy and to their development needs. China, for example, has used this period to shift from a principal focus on exports to a much stronger growth of their own domestic market. India is focusing very strongly on infrastructure development and investing in the means of long-term future growth. Climate change is an additional area of challenge, but also of opportunity. We're hosting COP17 in Durban later this year, and with the challenge of climate change is also the opportunity of the green economy. Technology is fast changing. Anyone who has any personal communication needs will see that. But besides the ICT, there are also major changes in biotechnology and nanotechnology reshaping the world in which we live. This graph shows the size of different economic groupings in the global economy. If you look at the left-hand side, in 1980, right on the top, there's a tiny part that is light blue. That was China's weight in the global economy. If you look at the thin white line, that's about 2009, that shows China's share. If you look at the end of the graph, 2015, you've seen a massive increase in the size. This graph, I think, is represents graphically what happened with a relative decline in Europe. The developed economies as a share of the global economy is smaller, and the growth action has moved east and south. But with this come new challenges, and I thought I would share with the members of the select committee the trade balance between South Africa and China. An important relationship, one that's likely to deepen further. If we look at what we sell at the moment, the top 10 exports. The top one at the moment, iron ore, followed by ferro alloys, chrome, manganese, platinum, platinum, steel, gold, copper waste, zirconium and vanadium, and cobalt. All of those raw materials. What do we buy? Cell phones, laptops, photocopiers, and rubber boots, television, kettles, microwaves, posters, dresses and women's jackets, suitcases, sports shoes, and computer and electronic parts. All of them finished products, consumer goods, that rely largely on the kind of products find on the left-hand side. So for our own material into good and fire. There's an opportunity in that. That opportunity is what we call figures of the cross. I'd like to share this slide. It's a map of the continent with the railway lines indicated. The thin blue is Africa's current railway system. We've had a few things to find. The first one is the missing middle. That these railway lines are not linked to each other. Because they're not designed principally to promote trade and economic integration on the continent. They're largely designed when they were built to allow things that we grow, things that we dig, to be moved to ports of entry, to be transported to other parts of the world. So underlying this, if you look at the trade data, Africa currently, all our external trade, only 12% of our trade is with ourselves. Compared with Asia, it's about 50%. If you look at Europe, it's about 70%. So we don't trade and impact economically with each other to the same extent as other continents. Each of us is one challenge we need to solve if we are to achieve greater integration. The new growth path addresses the deep seated structural problems that lead to high joblessness and inequality. It specifically seeks to turn around the major job losses as a result of the recent economic crisis, but also take advantage of these opportunities in the regional economy and in changing global conditions. We've pulled on the mandate to prioritize firm creation. Cabinet approved the new growth path. We worked with provinces to identify priorities for 2011-12, and the same that outlined those in the same for national stage. If we are to achieve more, we need to align the three spheres of government and the agencies of the state, regularly reporting on what each is doing to support implementation and growth. This is a graph I will just run through very quickly that shows the relationship between growth and employment. The key here is to ensure that we grow fast, but also, and very importantly, that we absorb more people for 1% of GDP growth. In other words, the labor intensity of that growth is critical. Across this graph, you'll see that with a very low labor intensity, we need extraordinarily high levels of growth. And in contrast, with a high labor intensity, you can manage to achieve your employment goals. But they're relatively smaller levels of growth. So the challenge for us is to get this mix right. In the new growth path, the first challenge to set ourselves is get a target of growth, and we set the target of 5 million new jobs by 2020. Now, on the one hand, this is quite a high figure. We've not achieved this level of sustainable job creation over a one-decade period. On the other hand, given how extraordinarily high our unemployment rates are, any target lower than this would condemn large numbers of South Africans to lives of unemployment, poverty, and exclusion. We've done a lot of the technical work underlying the number, but it's also in part a means of mobilizing society against a miserable outcome. We identified the new growth path in the documents that honorable members prepare, where employment is possible, what we need to achieve for those jobs and investments to come, what the state can do directly, what the state can do to facilitate broader growth, the role of the private sector, how we can align our outcomes with the job scope, and how do we seize the opportunities in this new regional and global environment. We've identified a number of job drivers. The President is serving the state of the nation as a priority one. One of the key job drivers is infrastructure. In both building our energy, our transport, and our communication infrastructure, in providing water, in the housing growth program, that we not only need short-term needs to absorb people in employment, but we lay a long-term basis for sustainable growth. In the main economic sector, we've brought agriculture back to the center of discussion about growth, about employment, and about development. And it's both the mainstream commercial agriculture, but it's also bringing small-scale farmers into the economic mainstream. One big area of focus for us is agro-processing, strengthening and supporting the agro-processing sector in order to pull more products from mining and depreciation. South Africa serves an indicator that an extraordinary level of reserve. If we take our non-oil and non-coal reserve, it's about 187 years of mining life. We've got in some strategic minerals such as platinum, the biggest reserve globally. And we've got to ensure not only that we dig more of stuff, but also that we transform water education program. Of course, in the detailed documents, some of the policies and actions get up. In manufacturing, we're building on ICAP2, which is the manufacturing driver of the growth part. We've identified tourism and other high-level services, like industries, business support services, that opportunity to create a substantial number of jobs. The third big cluster is in what we call the new economy. There is two areas. There's the green economy, which we've spoken quite substantially over the last couple of months, and we're now taking our plans over the next few weeks as budget votes are finalized. Honourable members, we will hear a lot more of the concrete details, the money that is set aside, partnerships that we're building in order to get jobs in the green economy. The knowledge economy or the knowledge sector is also a contributor to jobs directly, for example, in higher education, but also in creating a platform for long-term sustainable growth. Because it's in knowledge and innovation that we receive the opportunity for the product development. The fourth cluster is what we call social capital, the social economy, cooperative, social, community and union investment vehicles, your not-for-profit sector, which in many parts of the world is much bigger than it is in South Africa. And of course, the public sector itself, jobs and mainstream increases that are a result of the priorities of the government. But also what the state can do to foster short-term job creation through public work programs. And finally, we have a job in creation opportunities. In rural development, we see an opportunity to grow many more people into sustainable livelihoods, but also on the African continent. Africa is really the big story for South Africa. It's one of the fastest growing regions in the world. In fact, if we look over the last decade, 2000 to 2010, 6 of the 10 fastest growing economies in the world were on the continent, on the African continent. And we project for the next 5 years, a majority of national economies in the top 10 fastest growing economies are projected by the IMF to be on the continent. And this provides an opportunity for South Africa to rethink our relationship with continent, invest more on infrastructure that makes it possible to facilitate economic activity, to see what are the rules and the tariffs that restrict trade on the continent, and to support investments that are cross-border in fact, and to unlock the potential in the continent for the continent, including for South Africa. We've identified a number of policy drivers in the new growth part, from macroeconomic ones, dealing with monetary policy, the exchange rate, the microeconomic policy drivers that deal with cost, industrial policy, rural development, competition policy, which is a key area, combating monopolies and economic concentration, stepping up skills and education, enterprise development, which includes promoting small businesses, as well as ensuring that we cut unnecessary expenses, a form of broad-based national empowerment, so that we align much more closely with goals of jobs and growth, a form of labor policy, both supporting productivity, as well as improve protection for vulnerable workers, technology policies that are geared for supporting firm creation, small and micro enterprises, developing for trade policies, strong orientation to the new growth centers. If China is growing, what trade policy will underpin the logical change in the structure that I indicated earlier to the committee, and getting much greater beneficiation of products here and export of value-added products to China, to India, to Brazil. And finally, investment to support opportunities and development. So, practically, in economic policy, you use the combination of your macro levers and micro levers to try to support both your growth strategy and also your employment. And here we indicated the rough outline of these ones. Trade is one at the center of the new growth path. We set some targets for engineers, for artisans, for technicians. We encourage a broad-based approach to training, where 10% of the workforce is exposed to some form of training annually, so that we have a lifelong training culture that develops, and we take on the challenges of the 21st century, because we have a workforce that's constantly able to adapt and to come with new and fresh approaches to the challenge of production. Ethnic college intake, we putting more emphasis now on further education and training colleges, the community colleges. We seek to promote ICT at school and want to launch a program of ICT training in the public sector. Teachers, evaluate performance, improve it. There are a number of concrete proposals and actions that Minister Blaise and Zimande will be making shortly following the review of what people should be doing. We set the SOE's targets for artisan training, so ESCOM now knows the number of apprentices that it is required to take in over the next 5 years, and we bring in again to the center of our training system that SOEs must contribute not only to the artisanal and technological needs of their own company, but also provide a wider society. We want to make recruitment of foreign skills easier, coupled with skill transfer plans, and we'll be making an announcement in the course of this year on the review of policy. And finally, we increase the resources for training and focusing a lot more of that on further education and training. Honorable Chairperson, in the document, we set out in detail what we call the development policy package and the key policy factors. Because committee members have had an opportunity to look at it, I will run through it fairly rapidly, but really just want to highlight the different aspects. A call for a somewhat looser monetary policy regime, support a more competitive exchange rate, additional measures to address the competitiveness of the exchange rate, measures to address inflation, and one key example of that is the competition policy to address money. The more extreme fiscal policy starts with a real growth in expenditure, but not at the same level seen in the last decade. A strong focus on eliminating waste and a rigorous reprioritization of budgets. Tax organized labor and the business community, wages and prices, protecting the social wage, supporting job creation. A program to increase South Africa's savings rate, including some changes to the retirement funding reform and reducing costs on industrial finance, and finally a number of steps to enhance competitiveness and decrease price. Honourable members, you may see, for those of you who keep an eye on these countries, over the last 6 months or so, there's been a very significant decline in the price of broadband. You also have noted the actions that the competition authorities have taken in areas like fertilizer, which resulted, among others, in an unusual and important settlement where Sasol agreed to break up its blending operations and sell off the competitive file of its blending. You can notice the work that the Competition Commission has done in the settlement it has reached in areas like polymers. All of these are inputs, key inputs into the industrial value chain, and our focus has been now to try to get prices down there. A number of resource drivers that I identified in the new cocoa park, I'm very actively through these, set out in documents, and they include the state budget, the sources of the state on the enterprise, the DFI, some business announcements, telling us what the IEC will do on one aspect of the mandate to support greater labor absorption in the economy, using the sources of universities and council, time to fund the private sector, national investment. Donor funding, if you get donor funding, for example, for the green economy, and of course tapping more strongly into community on financial sources. I just highlighted on this slide some of the headlines in SONA, some new money, some negative focus, some new approaches the government is putting out, and more of these will be added in the budget speech. Minister next week, as well as in the budget speeches of different ministers in the economic life. Now, what we've done so far is to indicate everything jobs can affect, and I've tried to do this at a fairly high level, to indicate how we will mobilize money and resources to do it. But it requires also the institutional capacity, the ability to get things done. And when we talk of developmental skills, we have in mind an agile autonomous learning space. And that requires sort of like a profound shift in culture. So much of our work in the space is based on compliance and quality. So many of our rules have been designed to get key civil servants to spend most of their time, big portion of his time, in simply accomplishing. Where there's going to be a shift is the delivery of outcomes. And we've been in the report, how widespread the support has been, from civil servants, premiers, development finance institutions, everybody has come and said, absolutely vital. Let's unshackle ourselves from all the rules we surround ourselves with and focus again on the outcomes that we need to achieve. And of course, we're now aligning budget, programs, and procurement policies with the new growth process. Here's a list of key agencies in the state. Over the next number of months, we will be seeing how each of them play their role within their mandate, in some cases, within their constitutionally protected mandate, in achieving the broad goals that we have. But we can't do all of this only in the state. There are important institutional capacity outside. The private sector is key. And business and markets, as we say, are utilized by vital. They drive the jobs, investment, entrepreneurship to the equation, and they're key drivers of technology. Large companies are important. Yes, we need to promote small business, that will be a very big focus of our work, but also in a global civilized world being able to fold large philosophical companies that can be effective and successful in global markets. But having identified the importance that we put to the business community, at the same time, a developmental step is not simply asking the market for, it's not simply a step that implements whatever private companies may acquire. One of our jobs, for example, is to have an effective competition policy to challenge price-fixing behavior by leveraging our resources, by having a clear purpose, by strong alliances. Can align market outcomes for various policies. We're really trying to work with the private sector, much greater job outcomes and much greater development outcomes. We need to also identify opportunities for organized labor. They bring important resources from the skills of workers, productivity agreements, the capacity and resources to find funding. In investment vehicle, wage agreements, and public service delivery. And without a common vision and strategic vision, it's not possible to make real progress. And if you don't get this vision, the society will simply sort itself in policy polarization while the attempts to develop the challenge grow. Social dialogue is important, and we indicate that even though it's time consuming, we have to do it. We have to use NEDAC and other institutions. We have to mobilize the options behind the coordination. In other words, really, what the Negro Park seeks to do is a comprehensive response to structural crises of poverty, of unemployment, of inequality, and it's based on solidarity across the society. The idea that each of us must contribute to building the economy and to achieving the jobs goal. Now, what I've done, Honourable Chairperson, is actively run through a very detailed document really to get to the next stage, which is to connect it to the specific focus that the Select Committee has. And to make the point that apartheid state forced marginalization and the empowerment of our people, the Pakistan was forced as they deserve, and our spatial geography still reflects the old pattern. Towns were far from jobs, adding to the cost of analytical difficulty. We have new administrations, relatively new administrations at local level, with limited coherence on economic policy between the different spheres of government. Institutions and systems in some areas of the country that are weak and underfunded, particularly in the form of budget funds, where revenues are low and the skill space is limited. Yet the settlement pattern it shows the rarer it is, the brown it is, the greater the population density. Compare that with a map of the Pakistan, and you see a very strong concordance between where people were forced in the past and high population density today. Graph. This one shows provincial GDP by sector, and you see the big challenges we have. A few key provinces account for roughly half the population, but two-thirds of GDP, and two-thirds of all formal employment, and all private employment, although only half the public employment. And they also account for 3/4 of manufacturing and financial and business growth. The employment challenge set out, this indicates the labor absorption rate of different provinces. Much lower in the former Bantustan regions than in the metros and in the second cities. And this is reflected in provincial disparities for the lowest labor absorption rate in Limpopo and the Eastern. This is an indication of income, average and mean, for your major urban centers, your rural and small towns, and your former Pakistan. this indicates municipal revenue by source, again using the category, and the funding of capital expenditure by source in the major urban areas, in the small towns of the old South Africa and the former Bantustan areas. Now, the new growth plan seeks to develop a spatial perspective. And part of what we're doing now is to ensure support from state-owned enterprises in developing financial institutions. Members of the Select Committee will recall, in one of the presentations we did last year, we took the work of the IDC and we gave it a spatial dimension. And once we did that, we saw some of the where we're under-investing, the areas we're neglecting, and so a lot more of our work now is to measure the work of national agencies against the provincial impact that they have. We've got to drive rural development to create livelihoods in impoverished regions, but also to make the economic centers more efficient. And I'll come back to that in a moment. Part of the governance challenge is improved communication and alignment between the spheres, tailored implementation of the new growth path to the reality of the region, and extend to the effect the new growth path to say what is it mean for the Eastern Cape. So we've begun a road show to a number of different provinces where we've outlined what it means for those provinces. And so today's presentation is not really an attempt to go to each province, but really to see what are some of the cross-cutting features that we want to talk. We've raised the need for problems to clear and practical annual priorities and a better understanding of the employment impact of our projects and of our programs and our regulations. In the coming year, what are some of the things we need to do? We're aligning settlement patterns of economic activity through work that begins to look at not only demography, but also migration. Not only for the next year, but in the long term. The work of the National Planning Commission is crucial here, because what they really will give us is a sense of what the country will look like many years from now, that allows us then to see what are the economic interventions we need to make now to be able to provide a platform for labor absorption and social cohesion. We need better planning to secure the outcomes we want. Later, 15 minutes of one-on-one, I can take the Select Committee through the example of a power station that we both stated in Limpopo. And the need to use human settlements, a housing plan, planning around water, and the requirements both of power stations and of the local community, and also industry. Where will the components that will drive the power station be made? Are there industrial opportunities for Limpopo in that? How do you bring all of that together? Is the practical work what the growth path is seeking to do? So we ask, what is it that the growth path on a daily basis is focused on? Drawing those connections. It's identifying those opportunities and seeing which institutions need to drive them. We want to strengthen the MINMAP in this year, give us a focus now around the growth path, have clear priorities among our economic programs and projects, and address regulatory inefficiency of economic spending. We need to speak to foreign investors, and we try to identify what are some of the most effective to faster implementation of the projects that they want to back. One big challenge is the number of different sectors they have to go for planning and other conditions. Even within a municipality, there are often multiple entry points to get the necessary regulatory approval. And then we have not yet fully secured within national government a one-stop shop for foreign investors. At provincial level, we've been over the 3 years now some initial areas of joint action, aligning provincial and national economic plans, integrating the green economy plan developed by the IDC into the work of each of the provinces, looking at the provincial infrastructure, we now ask Transnet and Transnet strength, and to give providence the opportunity to fall on the area that has been identified. On a small business agency, we take through the first step nationally, which is combining Kula Sama and the IBC small business portfolio. But that's not enough. There are also a number of provincial and some metro small business promotion agencies. So, in the short term, we need to find very effective students. In the longer term, we need to see if we bring more of them into a single agency framework. So, the small business approach, one step, is we need to get mentoring, support, help with business plans, finance, and opportunities to identify procurement possibilities. The agro-processing to connect opportunities in a systematic way. Housing, for example, has very little agriculture, but it's a major agro-processing center in the country. And if we are to drive farming output, we need to strengthen agro-processing. So it means partnerships between provinces. Procurement, we're reviewing the regulations to provide provinces with new opportunities, and we've had a session with the MECs of Economic Development to outline to them what this will mean and how they can use this to promote local economic development. And then finally, the presidency is working now with the different provinces to set job goals for each province based on what provinces are doing and doing. Here, I just want to rapidly go through some examples of several enterprises that take a concept here, look at rail port pipeline projects, and see what is the implication for employment across different parts of the country. This slide will show IDC disbursement by province, by value, by employment impact, and we measure that against the province's contribution to the GDP. So you can see where we're underinvesting and where we stop up. ESCOM, that is a program of locating funds for coal reserves. We're passing the number of new jobs that we expect to come here. Many employment impact from attending the assistance supply across the country, creating jobs in the different provinces through procurement programs. Electrification and municipal electricity. If we are to take the broad framework quite quickly forward, we must have a spatial vision where municipalities and provinces can see how the new growth path opens up opportunities for them. The Economic Development Department, EDD, is now working with the IBC, Kula and Sama, to align the requirements of employment creation and equity into these spatial plans. And we're improving communication flows between the spheres to maximize impact. I'll use the example of the green economy. What we did there was gave the IBC the mandate to sit down with each of the provinces, see what they have in mind, what are the opportunities that they think exist in their area with the green economy. And then work on business plans and begin to identify where the investment can come from to unpack that. And considerable work has been done. We'll be making some announcements later today, as well as in the department's budget book, showing up what these are. Moving forward together is the MINMAX as an important forum, common vision for spatial development, aligning public entities and employment reporting to monitor the outcomes. So we have a conclusion, Chairperson. I recognize that within a few slides, all we could really highlight what we mean in the presence of 2011 of job creation, that one of the challenges that the Select Committee would no doubt look at in future meetings is how we can improve the coordination of policy, of regulation, of planning and implementation across government, how to involve communities, the public-sector's contribution to job creation, but also the partnership with private-sector initiatives, and the role of social dialogue, building greater consensus between business and labour, as well as the civil society. And all of these have a crucial role to play. Again, the President mentioned in the program that we had a meeting with business and labour community organisations last week. During the course of the solar debate, we'll be referring to that meeting, and it laid the basis really for a much more solid partnership on the new growth path and on the job goals of government. So I conclude, Chairperson, with the comment that this framework that we outlined in November last year in broad terms in the public domain now has considerable programs. When you look at the budget of a particular department, it will now spell out the how, what it will do to achieve these job numbers over the 10-year period, and particularly in the 12 months ahead. The challenge for us is to strengthen even further the work that we've started now with the premiers and with the MEC for Economic Development to bring the provinces and national government into strong alignment with each other, and also to strengthen those relationships with local government, through SALGO, but also through the major metros. We now invite the mayors of the metros to come to the MINNEC meeting, because they're such key drivers in the economy, such a big part of our GDP generated in the main urban centers of the country. So, Chairperson, thank you for the time and the opportunity to outline
Can we get those that are inside, please? Yeah, we need to the cook. Can we get the people of Pape?
High concentration of poverty and Certainly they will get to the point where they
world of great destiny. I think the assumption to say that we are developmental state at the moment is not right. We bother much more on being a welfare state than a developmental state. And to use the developmental state as a departure point, I think it's wrong. We are much more in the red in terms of the issues that present us as a welfare state than the issues and the scenarios that can label us as a developmental state. In essence, for me, the presentation this morning is about the slide number 11, which looks at the job drive. Of course, we want to create 5 million jobs by 2020. And I must say that I don't think, in essence, one can find something wrong with what the minister said and the team that he raised with the team. For me, it's more about what they didn't say. And if you look at the main economic sector there, that's supposed to be the main job driver in achieving that goal, it's based on agriculture, mining intensity, and manufacturing and work. That's fine. But in reality, on all, at least three of those, government is not coming to the table in terms of creating a framework to make it worthwhile to achieve that objective. Let's take an example, agriculture. At the moment, the farmer in the province that I'm coming from, the Northern Cape, is in dire need of support from government to assist him just to survive and through that create jobs. But government, through the Minister of Agriculture, was very great to say they're not going to support farmers in this way. What are they going to do? They're going to have a welfare approach to give each farm worker a food farm. That's a welfare approach, not a developmental approach. The same with the agri-process. Government must create incentives that make it worthwhile for farmers in specific areas to beneficiate their products. It's not there. The biofuel industry is the best example of that. Where government, where the farmers and so on over many years tried to convince government to say, invest in biofuel. Government didn't come to the table. So I can continue on in terms of that. The issue about mining intensification. There's a word that's now become a very big swear word in the South African environment. And that's the end word, nationalization. We didn't hear anything today about that. The reality is, we propagating a government to say, come and beneficiate. But last week, whatever, the mining houses of the mining endowment said, sorry, we're not going to come and invest as long as there are uncertainty in terms of the capital that we invest. So I can continue with that. But for me, it's not about what the minister said, it's about what he didn't say. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman Bunyangi.
Thanks, Chair. Some of the questions that we covered, so I'll focus on the things that we haven't touched. The minister has the issue from the overview in respect to the implications of provinces and municipalities, and I expected him to elaborate a bit so that we can understand what it is that he wanted to touch when talking about the new growth part. So if ever the minister can take us through the implications of provinces and municipalities. Linked to that is the issue of alignment. How is it going to be done? Because as the National Council of Provinces, it's a fact that we are representing the interests of the province, and every time again we're doing the oversight, you will find that there are serious challenges in provinces. And the minister was here that from the Khuja, coming to Khuja, where premiers were invited, and
gioca poi il primo per AM del National Money, del provinciale, how is that going to be achieved? Then the last question, Chairperson, I'd like the Deputy Minister to do a little bit of the explanation or elaboration about the common vision and strategic unit when dealing with all the role players. Where we are now, can you be able to say there is common vision and the strategic unit? And you have to talk about all the role players as it was even touched by the President in his State of the National Press, and fortunately enough, the Minister was even referring to that. So, to have an understanding of where we are now in terms of all the relevant role players, of course, what we have in front of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On slide number 4, the job challenge. I was looking at these countries, South Africa and China. So my question is, to what extent are these two comparable? And how does the issue of wages reach up in this scenario? And the other one is from slide number 16. Whereby they are talking about the proper chief requirement for compliance process to deliver and outcome. So the proper chief requirement to deliver, are these two elements going to be treated with the same level of compliance? And as they will be trying to improve on the job creation and economic health, can they also think of the traditional leader that they are saying this particular level of employment? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Premier. I want to try and keep some of the questions that you have. But the issue of integration, how integrated is those parts supposed to be in terms of department and SOE? We talked about infrastructure, whereas right now, for instance, we have ICT, but there seems to be a lack of integrated infrastructure plan. How do you put that? If you look at different departments and you want to spend more money on infrastructure, how integrated is that going to be? There's one issue I might have different ideas myself, I think today will come today. About the process of EIA. How will it feature and assist that in the new growth path? Might have FBI might want to do this, and where do you put this process? Because it is a major challenge in investment and in growth. On the issue of president as a job creator, will this include the revitalization of the rural life, the future, and with the time frame? Now, this question has been asked, but I'll ask it because how do you reconcile that there are poor people in certain provinces and mostly poor and unemployed? Most usually provinces, do you equate that with the resources for the growth part, major resources to the territory? And lastly, would appreciate to hear that what could pose as a major challenge in assisting this new growth part, so that if there's anything that could hinder the progress and achievement of this.
What could that be? and then we'll go to another round. Is that fine? Okay. Or the agreement that would you like to answer now? We take the
I'll wait then.
Okay, so we can just take the three members from the board members and then we'll talk to them.
Thank you, Professor. First question, the turnaround time for access to money for development. The second question is my welcome to the view that in some areas things did not happen due to lack of money. Now, the State of Indigenous Affairs was told us of billions and billions of money for job creation, but the situation is you walk and walk and walk and not accept any jobs until you say you can't work anymore. I'm not sure whether an answer to my question is contained in the DUSA monetary policy or in the one stop economic center, whatever that means, happen very much. I think a shorter turnaround time for accessing the funds is critical. Second question, coming to that way of railway lines in trade within Africa, how do the simple people put their excess money into the economy? Through a very simple vehicle. The vehicle that I'm wearing right now is stock exchange and what you give and the share. It is a language that is really not accessible. It's foreign to the ordinary person in the street. So I would like to know whether government has replaced for a simpler, accessible vehicle to enable South Africans to put their excess money into, for the sake of development in our country, or in the continent as a whole. Let me check. Thank you. From time immemorial, women are known to be pillars of the soil to produce food for their families and feed their children. Now this debate on land seems to be going on and off. Is there a mechanism which can enable women to access the land? That is to focus on land use while the big debate is unfolding, so that families can continue to produce their own food and thereby you know, reduce this a danger of food insecurity. We do really need a mechanism to enable people to use the land while the big debate on ownership is unfolding. And this access to be paralleled by support with regard to the know-how, with regard to input, and with regard to access to market for their profit. Not in Jefferson, not in. When it comes to the state-owned enterprises, this is such a reference to ESCOM. Is there a way in which ESCOM can be marshaled to move in step with government programs? You will establish a facility in a particular area, but the ESCOM will say to you, no, according to our plan, electricity in that part of the country will come in 2021. Can ESCOM really be made to move in sync? If this is the program that government has increased. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Makema. Honorable Shoki Mokor.
Thank you, Chairperson. And I want to honor members of the Honorable Just on the issue of interfere intergovernmental and the government and SOE coordination. Perhaps what we might need, I'm not sure how this is.
also like you do not have what the kind of situation you need. All the problems in different departments and everything, everybody works on their own strategic plan, and that there are things in the different strategic plan that are in a sense enough for everybody across the board. I think this is going to be we are emphasizing ICT training in secondary schools. If you look at Malaysia, South Korea, Brazil, all of those countries, the reason why they actually were able to develop much faster is because they introduced compulsory ICT training at primary school level. By the time people get to a secondary school, they've actually missed a lot. As a result, for us, the more rural, the more underdevelopment the area is, the more crucial it is for that area to have information and communication technologies, because those children would not have libraries, would have less books and so on, and they would be able to access the small. So I would like, again, linking with the intergovernmental coordination, really to see a much better coordination, particularly with the Department of Education. In this area, I'm quite convinced that it will make a difference. Linked to that, the strategy on emphasizing the coordination with other African countries and common development, I think that the similar context of the neutral path, working with the happened that deals with the international affairs. I don't want to call it the old name, the master of the Ministry of Union. But the point is, unless Africa has multiple submarine cables that go around the country, that go around the continent, we will never be able to catch up. And it is something that requires not only investment, but government involvement in it. Inspiring the private sector and the SOEs to invest, but working with other governments as well, not just South African, private sector leaders. And the reason why this is important is because when a cable lands on the country, they actually have to pay fees. There's often huge amount of fees, and every country decides the amount of fees, they would have to pay. So I'm just saying that intergovernmental coordination, I think, will assist. And finally, to say that with regard to the role of the post bank, I think that's a very welcome development. However, it would need to be treated differently than other banks, as is what has happened in other countries, so that it can be able to play the role that is expected to play in the supporting the development of the economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask the Honourable Deputy Minister, this job creation of $5 million at $9 billion over 3 years. I've been phoned by a couple of people this weekend who said that the figures don't rhyme, and I was wondering if you could make the actuarial facts available to us, please. Then, in slide 6, there are a number of goods that are being imported, like goods, whatever you ask, computer goods and so on. But why are they imported? It's goods that are produced en masse, but also with affordable production costs, which includes labor. If you look at slide A, we're talking reform of labor policy. And I want to know if we're really thinking of reform in terms of production costs. And if we are, in the process, enhancing production and employment with the labour reform. Then in slide 40, you talk about SOE artisans and targets to be placed. Is there a prescribed program over the next 5 years? And what types of artisans do you have in mind? Something very interesting is that you say there's minerals for 187 years. And it'd be very interesting to see the full analysis of the exports of raw materials versus local processing. Because local processing could mean local production and job creation. And does this growth plan include processing of raw materials? And to what extent is the nationalization actually scaling off foreign investment, as we have seen this weekend? Then, when you look at the Bantustan map of density of population, I think I want to join up with my colleague here, Honorable Sinclair, where he said, and my colleague from the Eastern Cape, Honorable McCarthy, where we're talking about thinking out of the box when it comes to rural development and employment creation in rural areas, because there are certain things that are necessary for production, and there are certain areas where we need a lifeline, and invariably that lifeline is electricity. The eastern part of the Eastern Cape, our Premier has asked for electricity for at least 5 years that I can remember. Then we need water, like in the Northern Cape, like in the Eastern Cape. If we want to develop sustainable agriculture for small farmers, we need water. And the water is just flowing into the sea. Building a couple of dams could change that. And then I want to ask, if there is a plan in this whole big plan of job creation and development for a disaster fund, because disasters cost the country a lot of money. And the Northern Cape will now be able to vouch for it because of the flood damages that they have had. The problem is that with a drought or with a flood, there are huge losses. And in our agriculture, with such damages, we lose things that you can't easily replace, like topsoil. You can't replace topsoil. But organized agriculture has a plan for a national disaster fund, an insurance fund. And that will cover, or should cover, even floods or wind damages to RDP houses. I know the Eastern Cape is often, and KZN is often damaged by that, by tornadoes and so on, or the houses of rain, wind, like they just collapse. So Kama had a lot of that, I think in 2007. Now, if you have a proper disaster fund, to which the government contributes annually, that money is available immediately for whichever disaster there is. So the people can be looked after immediately. And otherwise, we sit in the situation that the money only becomes available in the next fiscal year if all the damages are covered. So I'm asking, is this coming into the plan, because it will retain jobs? Because when there are floods or disasters, there is invariably job losses because of the circumstances. And we need to pay attention to that. Organized agriculture has come up with a plan, but in this big plan of your department, I'm sure you could polish up the whole plan for a national scheme. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Premier. Honourable Deputy Minister.
I'm not going to follow the minutes in which the book said that, because some of the things that I said earlier have to remember that the phrases are clapping together as part of the answer. Let me start with the definition of the rich. It's not the department of defining who the rich and who the poor are. It's just the women all over the country. Defining that in terms of income. And those statistics show that in terms of income, 10% of the population and how much in terms of revenue. So it's not so that's what defining. The issue of wage moderation has been raised by a number of people for different reasons. And I think it's related to the first question. I think one should master as South Africans and fellow South Africans is that what is the central message we're trying to put across? And that central message is that as South Africans, we're faced with a major challenge of unemployment and poverty and income inequality. That is the central message confronting us, which says, is there hope for all of us as South Africans mobilize around that issue to achieve, to reduce income inequality and poverty and unemployment? Now, clearly, this is starting on. And if you listen to Professor Kumbel, they say every day that we are one of the unequal societies in South Africa. A proposal has come across that was making one of the objectives is to begin, in order to deal with that question, to achieve a couple of other objectives. The first one is to deal with income inequality, begin to make sure that as you grow, as the increases for people are not necessarily the same, the higher working in order to achieve this income inequality, we achieve that objective. But at the same time, they also make wage moderation and flexibility are critical for. That is what I'm going to have to talk about later on. How are we going to achieve that? The people of the discussion of social dialogue I intended to arrive at a consensus solution is not going to be true. The question that arises is South Africa, provinces, alignment, integration, common strategic planning, all of those issues talk to me to one topic and group them together. If you look at a couple of municipalities, the networks in the picture, some of them have higher budgets than some of the provinces. Sheer size of the budget that the municipalities command, in a certain state, you can understand that if there were to be collaboration and working together between the national sphere, the province, and those municipalities, the impact would be high. Given the resources that are clubbed together. That is the reference we're talking about. It's quite important to me. That's the message we're trying to put across, that we needed to make sure that these resources are put together and we work all of us together in the same direction. The key point is what has been raised, the alignment. The alignment and the integration. And it's something that we need to be just emphasize it quite carefully. How do we do it in such a manner that, I mean, we've got to evaluate the current institutions, whether they are effective or not. But, I mean, for instance, if we to say that we have a huge strategic lesson in education of all spheres, it's difficult now, you know, the national government is so huge. You can imagine if you move away from that and create a bigger thing, you probably will not be productive. The question is how can you utilize the medium quite effectively to achieve that speed, both to align in that way and arrive at a common strategic position. I think that is the virtue of the policy. In relation to the budget terms, a number of things have been said. and under investment. The minister made adjustments to the fact that, for instance, in ICT was said, profile, give us a profile. Where are you investing? Where are you under investing? That intention is intended to make sure that we change the balance and have a focus in those areas where there's under investment. There's always, I don't know, honorable, where does the public, where government is going to be from migration, network migration is a natural phenomenon. On average, 2% of Africans in the African continent migrating into town. That's why over the next years, Lagos is going to be among the top 20 cities in the world. People are migrating to cities, there's no one who can stop that natural movement. Can't succeed. If the first was in the there's no intention on our part to do that as well. When they require, if you think that was a few days ago, that was the bottom that we have, are we equipped to deal with massive migration in town and proper planning for that? If you want to do that, that is the point we need to take into account. Private sector and investment. And I think two things are being emphasized in the document in terms of private sector participation. We'll come back to this thing because there's a reference, I will combine that with another question. So to give the practical example, as such, I want to upgrade some of this Chrome. So they need 300 megawatts of electricity. So we're going to ramp up infrastructure testing tomorrow so that jobs can be created by the project. One of the things we're going to be upfront about is how to make sure that we create the necessary infrastructure for business and the specific for business to be able to move. That's the first set of issues. But the second set of issues is incentive targets we're putting together, which we say we're going to incentivize business to private sector to participate. So that is the kind of strategy that we propose. On the SEC, I agree with you entirely. With the current structure of market, I went to Toronto to my relatives when someone was being anything in electricity. There's never been into any electricity plant. So there's no practice. There's purely which is not into any practice. Which the traditional argument and approach has been to link theory and practice. That's the kind of approach of beginning to try to minister in the mind of unpacking that. Because what we want to do is that the theory that has been happening at the FEC must be linked to the practice. We're working with industry to achieve those objectives. Our politicians and some of the startups concerned have also agreed to ramp up this with extensive capacity in a number of places. We go into SM parking and later. So we're going to make sure that we can ramp that capacity as well. But for you, I agree, which is not limited now, the FEC is going to rethink how we analyze in the FEC and link them with practice in the. That's a strategy that's taken place. On Luther Monitor Quality, part of the problem, you could see that Luther Monitor Quality literally is a restraint to car quality. Because once you can put all of them in there and function up the car quality and the monitor quality under the same standardification, well, at the time of cutting the document, a couple of things will happen. One, we had high interest rates in the country, short-term capital inflows, and therefore having an impact on the exchange rate. And therefore, if I got to address that particular question immediately, to look at monetary policy and have an impact on the exchange rate. That is the underlying system to ensure that we can have a progressiveness of our economy. For the second part, a key strategy there is that one of the typical problems with the South African economy is that we're not a crazy nation. And therefore, always a funding gap, because if you look at how much we're investing, we're not saving at the same time, in order to fund that, to get money from other nations. So, as part of that strategy of encouraging saving, the proposal in the document is something that has needed to look at one of the alternatives. The proposition is to look at convergence spending, contractor spending, and then so that people can put money into for retirement. Compliance versus outcome. I think we should not put as either or. You know, it's interesting, you know, I've been in the now, it's very important. One of the points made in the report was that you can spend where a million rand chasing 150,000. Now, the fundamental conversation is there's too much focus on compliance, whereas the regime is created by creating the SME. It's a combination of both. The SME is a combination of the same. People who are compliant with the rules, but give them flexibility to manage in order to achieve the outcome. So it's not a contradiction between these two, but there's too much emphasis on compliance than on outcome. And regrettable, even in hearing by committee, there's more emphasis if you comply with this, there was no assessment before, there was this, there was this paper, not this. Share with you an example I had in this presentation when we took a vaccine at MSU for environment. We were running the game reserve within the department, and then I'll put the into a separate entity. I asked one of the ministers what the difference. He said to me the difference that is that now to buy a toilet paper and the electricity is just compared to 11. So that becomes critical. Is that yes, they were sitting there, but at least you don't need 11. So that's the point we're trying to bring across. It is that compliance, yes, but should not compromise outcome. Should not compromise outcome. And you know. There's a question here about the EIA, isn't it? Okay, I'm a wrong person, but I'm not great. I'm a wrong person to answer this question, but let me attempt it. I think the intention is good. One of the things we did in our present draft in March 2008 was drafting a conference with investors in France. One of the few research that they had is something nice thing. But for 3 years, we're still waiting for an EIA. Clearly, one of the things we want to be looking into is the minister's made reference to the military part. I mean, we've got to examine some of those regulations without deviating from the good intentions. You know, I mean, someone has proposed it, maybe. The project that is sitting with an EIA for a year, who must trigger national intervention. You should think about because people are not doing the right thing, not on the right path. That's a problem. The intent of the legislation is good. The practice that is not much. We need to look into those things. Not only well put up under the government that say a great many type of criticism on this issue, but the question is, in an environment where there's massive poverty, how do you deal with what you're facing now with poverty, but having a long-term intention? And I think that's what the president was trying to link into. To say, indeed, because people can afford even to have food, surely you need to provide assistance, but the long-term objective must have these people must be able to have a life of their own. And that way, why needed to minimum protection for those who can not afford the residence and bring it to a broader objective of being a development state and make sure that you can create more jobs to be able to defend themselves. As regards the sector, I'm going to combine that question with the sectoral issues you've raised. I think there are people who characterize the South African economy as a new, what they call the mineral energy complex, which, from where I come from, I don't describe it as necessarily a bad thing. As necessary a bad thing, because what that is what is our comparative advantage to the nation. And what that says is that we are a resource-based economy. The challenge is how to make sure that we can utilize those resources effectively. That takes you to the processing issue we have raised. You know, I was looking at this presentation and I met this professor here in Japan to something called beneficiation. Unfortunately, most of the listeners, I was trying to find out what that means. I couldn't get a proper definition. Only the listener that I found beneficiation is something that says the book starts up again quite. Which means beneficiation is the issue of food. But why are we not achieving the objective? Talk to what Honorable Ufo was talking about, the R&D and other things were not being able to get the technology sufficient enough. What that means, for now, we've got to mine mineral resources, to sell them for now and to begin to R&D develop the technology or partner for technology to be able to do this. So clearly, the minister has emphasized Catalonia to the process of the agriculture main reference that we did, which is one of the strategic focus we're talking about. There was a question about Transnet River transition. Yes. In my brief project before 1st of November, I was under the understanding that Transnet has issued some tenders for some of those what they call grant lands. So there is a process to deal with that as part of the job creation. People have asked for nationalization. I've been asked this thing. I'm several this question on several occasions, giving investors if they ask me that. I said, as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if any government agenda is talking about nationalization. Not government. It's not even on the agenda in government, cabinet meetings and so on. Yes, indeed, in the agenda of the written question, the started discussion, I don't know whether I'm qualified to speak on the other half now. The people want me to say on the other half, I can do that with ease because I happen to be telling the national So, if they were back, so can you explain the details? I'm not sure to qualify in this capacity with the next time and so on, but so, but I can tell you the difference and why it's important to think of between what the ruling party is talking about and what government is talking about. I want you to draw that distinction for now. Look, there's this issue of the difference between China and South Africa and so on. If we were to be that labor met at the course of that side, there will be that cost of labor met at the base in terms of budget expenses. But the economy is such that miles apart. China has become the second biggest economy in the world, overtaking Japan. Now, if you ask me, before coming here, and they're coming to Parliament and being elected, they're not going to have it. If you ask me whether we can compete with the Chinese on television, I can say upfront no. But the era where we had, when I started being an organizer, there were 4 or 7 across television in South Africa. There's nothing. 80% of the companies, I think, industries were the right cycle of the things which I organized. There's no one else in the society at the moment. So, sharing what we need to do, given the nature of our economy, identify those factors, agriculture, and education, and capital goods and so on and so forth. Those are steps that we were likely to make a bigger impact. We're working hard. Where we can, even on those large industries, we can make an impact. We'll definitely assist. In relation to contacting with traditional leaders, when we come, my last message is going to come. I'm going to deal with that enough. There's the issue of access to finance. I don't want to mention to you, honourable members, it's a problem. That's a problem. There are a range of problems which are associated with this and the nature of the economy, the nature of the banking system in South Africa, the nature of the institutions which government has created. It's something everyone would appreciate to turn around that. And let's take it as a point plan question, which this government needs to attend to because it's a political problem. It's the whole issue of access to finance, including trade, which I've talked about. This is the market, not market change, but the software and other things. How do we make sure that those savings are mobilized in a better way? That comes to move instead with the government. ESCOM provides an electrification program through government financing. Now, if we give them less money, they will provide less electricity. So, at the rate at which we're electrifying at the moment, which are roughly about 150,000 households per annum, with a backlog of 3 million households, it's not going to be inappropriate. It's a challenge. Some of those things, we need a amount of priorities, we need to shift priorities to both of us, and make sure that we can achieve that. We've got a backlog of 3 million households, and households are not a certain. I know the target. Households are growing. So we need to be dealing with that quite effectively. One of my friends, I agree with both your points. But if you are aware, I mean, it just gives you the background where you come from. Because you are aware that the West Coast cable, marine cable, they were tracked. And your viewpoint on the best bank, we just hope all of the members here will agree with you, will put this legislation in place, which is the situation we support.
One thing I want to correct to if people are saying, that's why you're saying, give me what do you call it, a plural value or a model, which is measured in figure. Because if you attach $5 million and say $9 billion, after $9 billion, your outcome is $5 million, then your question is correct. 9 billion is but one contribution amongst a variety of interventions. 5 billion is not going to come out of the 9 billion. Okay. It's going to come out of a variety of interventions, 20 billion incentives, and so on and so on. In fact, the minister will be debating this afternoon of community development, among other things, is going to announce other measures by ITC, other than the 10 billion alone. Over the next 5 years. So, a huge number of interventions which are related to this issue. I've tried to convey, I didn't labor from, I didn't find it. But the issue of autism, I think, is closer to, and we'll see when that happens, it's closer to my heart because originally I'm a mental health. So, I've seen the training of mental workers over the years and how the training was taking place. We had in the gym industry, within the system, what is called a solid code. I normally quote this figure, which has gotten in the gym news that in 1975 we had 33,000 registered offenses, mainly one, in 2000. We had 10%, 3,000 of all rapes, which is bad. In average age of an accident, it's 54, that's my age. I'm always within the dying issue. So, you can imagine an economy with that structural crisis. I mean, we changed the training system completely because if you look at who was doing the training, it was Eskom, ISCO, or before privatization, it was Sasol, it was Transnet. We privatized some of them. And the nation doesn't mean the ANC. When ISCO was privatized, there was another organizer of news at the time. I even arranged the funding for the worker portion. Not the term. We privatized Cisco, we privatized Bancroft, we commercialized Transnet, we commercialized Epsilon. The end effect was profit increase, the bottom line. The first target was training. So we could begin to reach this thing and get it right. Let me get it right. So, only the other part, I'm not so far, I'm qualified to. It's a complicated proposal of putting forth by the farmer. But coming back to this message, which includes traditionalism, I think there's no doubt in our minds that every specific constituency in this country has got to be consulted. Because what is the objective of this thing? The objective is to mobilize South Africans around what all of us begin to call a beautiful discussion. Problem for our society. It will never, have a stable society for as long as there was unemployment, poverty, inequality. So we're going to contact every constituent in South Africa, but we're going to mobilize it. Let's all have a common vision. You may disagree with me in terms of my purpose. You know, I met with an interesting statement in the fifth phase solidarity. During the weather, there was the problem for the strike. You know what I liked about him is the proper South African. He said to me, you know what? I hate your government, your ANC government, but I love the country. So I cannot be back in a situation like that. Now, I'm raising this issue because sometimes South Africans become petty, forget the central message, and what is that message?
all of us may have different viewpoints. Let's talk about those different points, but let's have a common vision in South Africa. One of those common vision is to ensure that you can deal with this whole issue of unemployment and inequality for the love of the country. For the love of this country, make sure that you can stay the country. You may disagree with regard to society. This is part of the notion. That's why I like to see data, always quoting. And somebody could not give the answer. Says, no, the film is a philosophy game. It's a society. It doesn't like the answer. You just basically the moment. So, that is the very key of the message you want to present. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Minister. We will now open the floor for another round. I don't see much answer, it means that clarification has been given. Honorable Abrams, Honorable Meshew, Honorable Chile, Honorable Celeste, Honorable Bata, Honorable Lee.
Around 2004, we all spoke and amended
center currently in the run creating most of dogs within the country. And my concern is still the power of the industry in this location of higher and fast. Because higher is to hire people in there, they are on the other side, they are very fast. Now the impact goes to me, I think that counts more. How are we going to affect that kind of situation where maybe higher the people but maybe further have got more people that can fire and lots of jobs. So to me the question of impact is going to be very important. The link to that is also around the 5 million target over the next 10 years. I saw on the slide saying about 2,000 targets for health companies for this time 10 years or so. How are we going to maybe give a target to all the sectors of the province to say we're going to employ approximately 500,000 people in the sector a year? Are we going to be looking for giving targets to provinces and sectors and so on? I also tell you, like the question around the old or the setup of the government, especially when it comes to rail and transportation. Because you can't have an economy if you can't have movement of services and the people. Now, how are we going to make sure that the minister does to break with the public? We have the rail going to come to. Similar means of transportation to the townships and to all these dispersed areas. Because without us having a clear plan of ensuring that it does take place, we will not be able to move on into it. Lastly, are you the minister and the minister considering putting or setting up procurement targets for cooperatives in all government departments to say as part of promoting this form of ownership cooperatives, one is a level department target taking from the cooperative. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable President. Honorable President.
Thank you very much, Chair. Deputy Minister, there are few comments and in the process many questions could be asked. First, in relation to South Africa having been and continuing to be a continent of economy. What are the attributes that kept the country as the top part of the continental economy? And are we there? Are we moving up? Or are we losing status of becoming in the top continental economy? And what then the pack more going to be one of those major points to addressing the economy? But what would be the fact? What would be a social contract? Is it going to address the problem in relation to sector development? Or is it going to also be geographical in providing response? And I'm asking this question, counting as a process contributes 60 to 65% of maintenance. South Africa contributes 10% or more into the continent. So if in the new DC is it going to be treating problems in the state? how are we going to have the blanket approach that one province is the same as the other against the attributes and the endowment of province? And is the strategy also for the extent to which this is going to respond to the Millennium Development Goals? Is it with this, are we going to meet the Millennium Development Goals? Or is it something that could also be focusing on goals? Thank you.
Thank you.
Given the fact that we currently have a situation where individual provinces are undertaking particular initiatives with regard to ensuring that ultimately housing, for instance, is on a training initiative, which I think would go a long way with regard to addressing the curriculum content of the deficit sector. Housing is also a joint beginning to say we should honor the agreement with regard to ICT. We had about 45 years ago, which was a massive implication in terms of job creation. One of the things that I wanted to do is that we should be able to go back to innovation to that particular sector. But I also wanted the Deputy Minister to indicate that in terms of process, whether the current framework is it an outcome of a concerted consultation and discussions within with labor, organized business? Because I think the success of this particular process will be dependent on the extent to which out of those particular sectors you are able to ensure that there is a particular binding in relation to this particular program. Because once there is this facility that on the basis of some degree of consultation, particular groups continue to actually narrate or indicate. My fear is that we would actually 5 years down the line be sitting with another problem that is going to be delivered. So I think it is important to get an indication as to the extent to which from process has there been a concerted effort to ensure that particularly labor and business are part of that agenda. The last issue is an issue with regard to whether, don't you think, Deputy Minister, there is a need for us as a country to begin to review the state funding agency? And we currently have about three, NES, ICC, and CODA. But ordinarily speaking, the point is that the ordinary chairperson from Limpopo region around the turnaround time becomes one of the stumbling blocks with regard to development. The capacity within this particular institution to produce a bankable business plan so that they could alleviate joblessness is one of the key questions that I actually want to say. Indeed, it's going to be a stumbling block for this particular process to actually go forward. So I think it will be important that much as you do not think perhaps it is perhaps right for us to go into a process where we can review and begin to constitute a single integrated structure that has got a particular dedicated focus to SMEs and cooperatives, but ultimately, what is the necessary capacity that it can actually seek to produce to ensure that even a gentleman or a person who has got an RDP house can understand as to what is the value of that house from the point of view of the value of the property going forward to ensure that that particular property could also stand as a collateral for purposes of the fact that you need to ensure that there is indeed economic development that is going to happen at the right scale within a particular area. Thank you.
Thank you. recoveries. Goodness, Jim. And so much of that is suggesting an explanation of the plan. I do believe I shouldn't have joined the Democrats behind. Because it's all about regulation rather than compliance, if I listen to anyone. It's over-regulated. 11 signatures is ridiculous. Remove the regulation, but compliance is better. Whatever the regulations are, we have to comply. And so there's really no difference of opinion between the two of us on that. I'm really, really happy with that. Mr. Chairman, the question about it, and I don't come from metal, I come from electrical. I've been a pension of electrical, doing corporation training, 1970 to 1973, before I started my training at the university. The German corporation probably don't train apprentices anymore. Sadly, I became the accountant at Dunlop and Bailey Smith. And I shut down the training centre because it was costing us too much money off our bottom line. And so there you are. There is another area that we agree, Mr. Chairman. We may sit on different sides of the floor, but there is indeed a common vision for South Africa in many of us. Sometimes we will just technically disagree about how we go about it. But certainly there's often agreement. Now here's a disagreement. Bureaucracy. Fairly to say, Mr. Deputy Minister, we believe your department should not exist as a party. Now there's somewhere we disagree quite violently, and so I'm somewhat waiting expectantly for your reply to the question of us setting targets for employment in an already bloated bureaucracy. And I would hope that your answer is going to be one I can agree with, where you're saying we must encourage productive employment rather than bureaucratic employment. So I await your answer on that one. I understand it was a dying history rather than a dying man. You may be 54, I'm 58, and I'm not yet dying. That took me by surprise. When I thought about it a bit more, I understood what you were saying. So thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Minister. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. The Deputy Minister is doing quite well for the good members of the DA over today. And for listening to the program, Deputy Minister. Honorable Nguni.
Children did not understand whether the need of what, how it is different from as far as the financial is concerned, from their part. Because when they did with their part, or anyway, their part was the infrastructure, it was looking at financial difficulty in Africa as a whole, so that we compete economically as a block. Now that the new growth part take into consideration the Nepal issues or all the work that was done in Nepal. As far as still concerned, what are the issues raised by the economic growth paper that the short-term penetration is what because of the still recent development that is also part of not enough technology innovation. Now, with the skills, the South African skills, the big problem, how do we see ourselves in the case if we have this application of skills? If you look at the term of engineering or the term of creating a particular job in 2020, I think we have 10 engineers and 10 doctors and so forth. The time is great. That is the is it very feasible that he will be able to create a particular job in 2020 and then have the necessary economic growth that will be able to absorb so much labor, taking into consideration the time that when one studies now, accumulating experience in the And what challenges have been posed by political instability in North Africa to media in North Africa? Political instability. We have just seen President Mubarak has been resigned. There's the upheaval in Tunisia. How does this political instability, as you are in Africa, the contagion effect, problems or what threat can be posed on the Negro front? Because we, as a country, we are not in the economic state, not at all. The other countries that we have to link with, the other countries that we have to work with. Now, they are within the, also in the countries, the cost of the oil today is okay. The under the dollar to product. I mean, the stress that has to go by the portion of the income. I mean, it affects the oil price, it affects the cost of the transportation in South Africa. Everything that goes on. What threat that is going on the cost of? And we've got the National Trade Act. That on the other hand is good, but on the other hand is bad. Because we've got a lot of people currently who cannot go to any other financial institution and get financed because the NCA is the accepting the product. It's the same thing to them. And as we are looking at improving or supporting SMEs, of which one element for this set is not as the small business or informal economy are the most secure Christians. Now, those people who are able to access finance, either from the bank, from the shark bank, or even from the DFI, how do we see them economically active if they are economy rendered useless by the SBA? Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Yes, and thank you to the Minister for the frank answers and interesting discussion. I think it's necessary that we must just agree that to compare South Africa to China and to try and drive that imperative can't be the right approach. China is a complete different environment, a complete different society with their own dynamics, and we will do ourselves I'm writing that to say that we must understand that the dilemma that we currently experience in terms of the crisis, as we said in the food regarding unemployment and poverty, yes, to some degree, the result of the apartheid system and the patterns before 1994. But it's also got to do with a certain strategic approach since 1994, since the new government came into power. And we know the whole development of the RDP to here. And then there was a crucial development which many people would relate to as an instrumental change in the
direction of South Africa economic development. And that was Polokwane Kwan.
Adam Abis, the professor, said Polokwane was about two issues. Polokwane was a revolution against capitalism and a rebellion against sovereign base. That's what Adam Abis said. Now, I always argued to say that I would rather prefer to be labeled as a capitalist with a social problem than a socialist with a capitalist one. The answer of many of these issues that we are facing today lies in the notion that capitalism has got a tendency to resolve these issues better than socialist approach. Now my concern is in the post-colonial period, and we know the dynamics, the internal dynamics of the South African political sphere at the moment. The new growth path is a manifestation of the post-colonial syndrome, which is more socialist than capitalist in time. Now, I already said that my analysis is that we need it more to a welfare state than a developmental state. Now, for me, it's neither about RTP or PR or about the new growth path. I think in essence, as the Deputy Minister said, for the love of the country, we must agree that whatever plan we adopt, we must implement. The problem with the RDP and the year, even this one, that we do a wonderful plan, but we don't implement. And that is the issue that I want to raise. Now, in terms of that, the Deputy Minister refers to that. I honestly believe that our institutions are too big and too clumsy, and that we've got too many spheres of government. The 11 cities that turn from that military person. We don't need that. We must streamline the process. But we must also look internally. And our party that I belong to honestly believe that the government, even the cabinet, is too big. We don't need such a big cabinet. And I'm not a member of the DA, I'm a member of other parties. I will whisper outside this part. Say no, I'm a proud member of the Congress of the People. But the point in argument, we must simplify our actions. It's well and good to say that we will bring Minmax in and we'll bring Falka in and so on. But we complicate that if there's too many decision makers and too many people that must be involved in all those processes. So for me, separate from the answer to the challenges of development. The first one is, we need to look at the spatial development framework after that. And now I'm speaking with my northern head. That part where there's no way, we must use that resource and take principal policy positions to say that government is prepared to invest in a smelter in Katu. Then we start to think in the right direction. Then we will start linking that railway line to the city into the benefit of the people. Deputy Minister, I always say, we mustn't make Johannesburg and David Durban and Cape Town more richer. We must make Upington, the other parts, the rural areas of the Eastern Cape, Limpopo, we must empower them economically. So that's the first issue, spatial development plan. The second issue is the one about implementation. This plan will only succeed if we agree that we will implement.
Thank you, you wish for us that you reach a couple of quarter of course alone. Thank you, Mr. Arthur. Honorable Sabina?
Honourable Chairperson, the Deputy Minister is not a Deputy Minister for nothing. Sure, but he's a politician. He sees the challenge of employment and the whole the central message in this plan. It's the challenge of employment and income inequality. Now, again, and I asked the same question last week in a committee meeting and I got no reply. When you look at slide number 4, and you look at the labor absorption in China versus South Africa. Everybody thinks, this looks very bad. But can your department please give me the poverty ratio where people live below the red line in each of these countries, please? I thought you ducked out of the other model really nicely with the docs, but I understand your answer. The IDC profile of investments and under investments in certain areas and comments of my coping friend here. Honourable, Sophia Tukwali, a while ago when he became Minister of Human Settlement, he said, we're going to build new cities. Well, I don't know if you can tell me if there are any plans for new cities and new human settlements. And then you said you're not an expert on EIA, but there is a regulatory impact. The intention food versus practice it may not be. However, one must understand that the EIA process is there and to accommodate proper public participation, which is a constitutional right. And I think one should also pay attention to what the outcomes of these EIAs are, that we don't just force them through, where developments are not sustainable because of the lack of core capacity. Other than, I agree with both you and Honourable Lee about the training of artisans, my concern is a stigma to an artisan profession. I would really think in terms of changing, doing a mind shift there, because the training courses are not sufficient, on the one hand. Yes, on the other hand, a great deal of education is also not preparing our youth for the job market, which is a big problem. Then, the disaster fund that you said you're not supposed to understand, I will explain to you in short. Disaster equals economic setback. Economic setback equals job losses. If there is immediate funding for a disaster from an insurance fund, to restore the disaster, we can retain the job. It's as simple as that. And then, Honourable Mayor, Honourable Mbuni referred to the SMME development. It is a problem, and we had a presentation last week in one of our committees where the co-ops were pushed tremendously, and again, the same questions that are coming up today, how are we going to access money, the National Service Act and the banks, because people do not have collateral. Those questions to us are still being unanswered. Maybe it's a serious problem, maybe you can help us out on this one. I'm just raising this in support of them and the meetings that we had last week. Thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Minister, one of the job drivers is identified as the social economy. What economic changes must be set in place to take the social economy into account, especially when it's a minority happening after this crisis? To ensure that it's confident in the sector and that resources are made available to achieving a common goal and confidence in ensuring that the sector is obtaining the scale model. In relation to the other job drivers, and the new economy, the green economy, there are challenges for them, especially in the form of investment, awareness, and compared with certain technologies. What will we do in terms of a new product? It's short as we can go to the
thank you, Economic Workshop, and my colleague.
Thank you, Chairman. I think it's
clear to everything that we say, exchange of practices, exchange of let you know this kind of thing makes the comfort of the people grow. So the kind of but that methodology is important so that the honorable members are not in contempt of court. But you know, there was a good feeling that Mr. Shiro is not a member of the conference of the people. So there is no group Shiro. If Mr. Pierce has said that he is something else. So, yes, he may challenge in court that if he is successful, that I can go. So I'm just protecting everyone so that no one is in contempt of court. Chairperson, I feel that that is important, I think, of the honorable member who are talking about conversation. I think one of the things that Ethicast we have not managed to do well is to build on the good that we have done before. Often our letters dealing within the same department, whether the case of Namista or even the case of Director General, we have a change almost of policy, of media progress, and so on. So I was just wondering whether it might not be something that the Minister and Deputy Minister might want to look at. This relates to having this shared vision. The document talks about a commitment to forging a national consensus. Maybe in practice the consensus to be beyond the alliance partners and the partnership between business and government. In other words, what the UN commonly called the tripartite consensus, is about the multi-partite consensus. They might in fact be not all, but I think that they should be things if the new group cast that we could have a consensus on even across political parties. It's something that I think we need to begin to build on. It might require reshaping here and there, but I'm quite confident that as part of the new way of doing things, I have tried to get the together, to the real together, not as South Africans. We might want some process that is, to what extent is it possible, that is a national consensus and a multi-party consensus, especially as part of this objective in the document is to develop our democracy, and the democracy can maintain your government, the legitimacy things are getting things to happen. So that you don't have the deviation from certain things which the South Africans would have identified as tyranny.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable
Chair, first of all, the Deputy Minister again. Two points I'd like to make. One is to share the viewpoint just made by my friend and colleague from COPE. I think the guardian part of the NGP is that there is considerable ground for consensus on many of the issues. But if we're going to move beyond consensus to some of the hard decisions, to turn from a developmental state to a delivery state, we're going to have to face up to some facts. And here's one that I tried to get on the Deputy Minister early on without success. The definition of a wealthy person in South Africa is anybody who earns more than 15,000 rand a month. Now, that's an important figure because that means that most teachers, nurses and policemen, not most, but many teachers, nurses and policemen, are statistically speaking very wealthy people. In fact, South Africa is the only country in the world where the wealthy go on strike by our wage. And what that does is remind us that when our organized labor institutions start talking about the redistribution of wealth, they must realize that this applies to themselves and to many of their members as well. 50,000 rand a month is not a lot of money. by international standards. Of course, if you're earning nothing, then it's a tremendous amount of money. But it's not as if we have lots and lots to be distributed. And when we're addressing issues of inequality, we must bear this in mind and put the emphasis on developing the poor upwards and not the so-called rich downwards. And then something that's mentioned in passing in the overhead we saw earlier that the minister addressed, something that I think has enormous potential is this issue of African development. And it's in the overhead projections, I don't know what page it was, but amongst the job drivers, it was spatial opportunities, including African regional development. And then amongst the policy drivers, point 11 in the policy drivers was investment to support African development. And then if you look at the expanded NGP document, which we were very kindly provided with, you'll see there's quite a sophisticated elaboration here on improving the roads, rails, and port systems, and regional integration on energy, and improving telecommunications and internet connectivity. Yet, strangely, in all these documents, the government has apparently failed to remember that we have a country called Zimbabwe on our borders, which might present an obstacle to these social opportunities and these developmental initiatives. And I think this is an example of where consensus is not enough and hard decisions have to be made. And I'd be interested in the Deputy Minister's views on that without necessarily having to venture as far afield as Cairo. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairperson, one of the challenges that we face in creating jobs is the cost of doing business in South Africa, the high cost of doing business in South Africa. Now, considering that some of the job drivers is located in agro-processing and mining verification, which measure will require some foreign direct investment? Now, I don't know if this growth path is addressing this issue. Of course, the cost of doing business in South Africa is, by international standards, very high. If you look at the cost of just port use for vessels going into South African ports, it is very high. Transport in South Africa is really more high. And even the freight cost, if you look at the banking cost, I think South Africa is one of the highest in the world, and that links to the cost of money also. So I'm just wondering if this issue of the high cost of doing business in South Africa was taken into account in some of these job drivers were put into the double document. Well, this is one of the major issues in South Africa.
Well, I think it's only fair that I have to ask a question, Honorable Lee. You very Chairman, just a chief finger quickly. The minister, the deputy minister mentioned that the minister is going to announce further interventions, and I was wondering whether he could give us a preview of what those are.
Minister, the members of the IEC Kula Tama, could this have been informed by the structure of the Brazilian model of the things, CADS, vendors? Or is it purely to make the financing of institutions much more manageable? Or will this measure also review the cost of capital as well as access, as well as access to capital and information for SMEs and co-ops? Deputy Minister, I see that you are convincing the most ardent members of opposition parties to support you.
Thank you, sir. No, I don't have a problem. In fact,
we disagree where we were not even supposed to disagree. I'm not going to take that. Because in most cases, we just talk about each other. That's why I'm trying to make sure that the debate is as fair as we can. So that I can understand where you come from, you can understand where I come from. Look, the whole spirit of the debate. The difficulty I have is that when people don't administer most of the time, when they see one of them in front of them, they shoot all the questions, irrespective of whether they're part of your portfolio or not. And I've said that, so I'll do my best, but I can't guarantee that I'll answer from basic indication to anything else. Because what the framework was created is that each and every department, and I'm going to begin to say, how do I constitute as a department? Now, it doesn't mean, I was listening in one province and looking at people there. Someone said, yes, we probably helped us, yes, because each one of us was asking and how much in each department is going to create now, and how many people are the employer of the department. What we were talking about is how to make sure that we facilitate the creation of jobs. That's a fundamental principle. Now, with FEC, everything is quite clear. It's subsidy, the government is going to provide subsidy. No doubt about it. The complication for me would be the computer part of it, our own centralized, and that's going to be the complicating part I want to understand. In relation to small and medium enterprise, I think we're beginning to take a view, a critical one, which we need to, that it's an important sector, quite an important one. That's why we are saying, let's streamline all the institutions that are supposed to decide this in small and medium enterprise. You've got a Kula, you've got your Samos, you've got NES, but CETA that provides the support. There's no something that talks to each other in terms of providing the necessary support. You know, my sister-in-law had a shop in Japan. When she tells the story, is that they were given a loan, but at the same time, they were supported to make sure that they understand the business, they're supported with every kind of thing, and became supported. So, if they have the feeder in a different kind of direction, there's no what is in call it institutional kind of cross-pollination. So that's the focus we're beginning to do, we need to do now. In addition to that, there's a whole reclassification of the law. The chief one has been a block of building, it's a little bit of a different look at education of the law. So streamline them, make them to have an impact. Obviously, it's going to be a major issue for drive. We would welcome all of them our contribution in to how we can improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the SACA program. About China, we would ask the question, what is it that we have which the Chinese do not have? They don't have minerals, we do. The Brazilians have just told them, now, no, before you take the mineral, you'll build a steel plant here. And the Chinese comply. Because they need the mineral. So, the question we're going to pose ourselves, how far have we set up? The debate of beginning more than nationalization. The debate is how we make sure that we can utilize the steps that are strong on minerals to the benefit of the country. One of the things we did we was to say in the minerals of one time, if you want all minerals, as long as we put a big case with you, that's fine. Now, we there's no longer development, there are conditionalities we must have to. And in the perspective of little friends, good sake I say, we're good at chapter development, there are conditionalities to the minerals that of our kind of balance and wealth. We're going to think creatively about how to find much equilibrium on that. On whether there's going to be national consensus of the wages, prices, and savings, look, it's a contribution to the debate as to whether the labor unions will agree to wage moderation or business will agree on caps and so on. It's not as we would like to have the minus on areas of agreement, but not as a talk. On conceptual studies, I think the kindly meeting of the mind in that direction. I don't think on Thursday. I think we're likely to have a better consensus. On higher and five, look, the 5 million jobs we put forward were set at net. When the next 5 million jobs come to deadline. Now there will be fluctuations for us in the construction industry, whether the peak they pick up the jobs when down, there will be no fluctuation. But overall, that's where we are heading. As to the transport to townships and so on, the key should not be looking at the mode of transport. Should be looking at, which I think the owner's member kept at the quiet contact seamlessly, not necessarily at the mode of transport. If you look at the real higher question, is that one of the contributions of making an affordable and a quick transport to the township. It does not mean it's the only mode, but there's a stronger a view on public transport. If you listen to both minister and the minister of transport when they talk about what you call the metro rail, they commute about 2 million people today. So they put in transport. And but this is still a catchment which is outside that. So public transport is a commitment of this predominant target, you know, for corporations. But let me just say, one of the discussions we were talking about is Nelson Mandela went to Albion buses in Brazil, Cape Town started in buying Brazil, buses in Spain, France, they were buying them in some other countries. We posed the question, would it not that be in the best interest of the country if the contract was one? And with one condition, that those buses were manufactured in South Africa. Because there's economy of scale. Right. So, to what extent the initial transport is going to, over the next 5 years, 7,000 work on the state. Make sure that with that volume, we're producing in South Africa. That was a set of issues. The issue of cooperative is a tricky one. It's a tricky one target for cooperatives. I don't think I've worked in the last one of them that's such a target. I've not come across it. Maybe the professor next to me will later on come in. But I just narrate an experience I had when I was with the financial sector. This professor in the meeting, look, the banks and insurance and the set aside money for empowering cooperatives to buy, for cooperatives to buy into. And the bank said, okay, here's $1 billion. By the time I left them, there was no single application from my cooperative. Now, well, that means all of us are going to challenge. And that challenge is how to make sure that you can assist cooperative movements to develop. skills that people start up here affecting. That is the challenge we have. One of the members asked whether South Africa, where is South Africa in the top 5 continental. South Africa is the biggest economy on the African continent. The second economy to us is Egypt, which was 4 times the size of Egypt. So that tells you the scale. The country that's likely to be huge because of huge markets and so on is Nigeria. Of course, there are a number of limitations which impact on that kind of stuff, where we must learn as well. I mean, the issue of rich of provinces is kind of a sensitive problem. Because provinces are not endowed with the same resources. And even the development of our country, if you use the analogy of something, the mineral energy complex, I mean, it'll tell you the subject because of the development of gold mines in the waste, that's where our economy revolves. And as a result, in the cost of transporting goods now, the government costs because of far from the house, that's how our economy develops. So it has been around minerals, and provinces that do not have sufficient minerals have not been the beneficiary of that. Few of them, especially the Western Cape and Cape, I think, can explain differently. Therefore, a result of trying to follow where growth is already in Africa, which is a problem. One of the things we need to do is what the honourable member from Hope said. I don't want to agree with him, but I have to. Which is that there are instances where, as a country, you take a conscious effort and say, we want to develop an SNK, let's go and put a financial in that SNK. You take a conscious effort. I mean, those are the presentations we're looking at as part of the intervention in the we're working on we are still think of this to be on track for the Millennium Development Goals. Our view is that we're still on track. One question that has in the background was in relation to women access and land. No one would dispute that. And in fact, in South Africa, the question is a concern of obligation for people to know women not to be discriminated against. The devil is in the, and sometimes all the traditions and customs which impact on that. So it is not something we can say, you prescribe a law and think that it won't happen anymore. You've got to work out your way out in terms of dealing with the particular traditions and customs within an appetite. Is the MGP an outcome of consensus? The answer is no. Is the objective consensus? Yes. If I answer that question, that is not. That's why we engage with the business and labor and others is to achieve a consensus. One of these is as I have on that concept, I have a similar problem with a huge worker. I'm not necessarily a supporter of a huge worker. My sense is that in EDD we're likely to manage with not with a huge bureaucrat, but with a lean and skilled man. Because the nature of our work, I mean, that's my wish. Okay. We would emerge with that as to whether we should exist. I've got my doubts as well. We're operating with skilled people who, even if we close it down tomorrow, from the minister to the minister and all of us, we don't feel threatened. But the point you're making is critical, because what they are saying, part of the problem is the notion that you must have a construction company building roads, instead of saying, we'll employ companies that are skilled in building roads, they will then support or create more jobs than that in production. Okay, which I think I will agree with that. The notion of regional integration is, and whether, and including Nepal, the new growth path takes a given existing position and policy. Does not say we replace it. It says we proceed on the basis of those policies and how can we give effect to them. That's the most important point of going to take into account. That takes into special dimension people and investment on the African continent. And one of the things we're saying, we share that sentiment. We're then saying the cabinet of the part of the problem, it's pointed for us to take regional integration seriously. We're not going to allow the Chinese to invest. They will invest in the same fashion that take the rail that takes the stuff out of DRC, not into meeting with us. So, part of that strategic thinking is that we ourselves are going to make sure that we can invest on the African continent in a manner which facilitates international trade. Beneficiation of scale. Yes, still will be a concern on beneficiation if we don't have the right skill. We have to go to change people the right skills right now. And the Minister of Mineral Resources is working with the mining industry in relation to the future needs of that industry. The water challenge is huge. No one will dispute this. Practical example, we're building a huge power station called Alaska for Middle East. Right? But instead, we're not going to withdraw the maple growth in South Africa. That's what's going to happen there. It's quite fascinating. Something that one would like to wait for me. We're building new things. Six turbines. Finish the third turbine. There will be no enough water to service the town, Matimba, Middle and the town. Right? So, what is going to be critical? Even then, I'm just giving you an example of one situation where the water challenge is confronting a battle. Because the water that's in that area at the moment has been pumped there by Enviro and ESCOM. So we need to pump more water into the area. So the water challenge is an enormous, which I agree, one of the honorable members said, with the water flowing into the sea without carrying some of those places. We will look at that program quite effectively. And they are being coming from the Eastern Cape, we're fighting for challenges, we're going to move in. So those are some of the issues. Would I agree with you on that point? What is that? Consider the effect of Egypt, Tunisia. Yes and no. I mean, the difference, I mean, I don't know how many of you are on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. Elena being invited, being a group, without myself invited, but this person, the Princess Zulu, has invited everybody from an opposition to the ANC, and the ANC member wrote that no, against the ANC. So there's this momentum building up against the ANC. Look, what they're doing is constitutional. Because they're not saying let's go and march in the street and throw stones. They say let's move another 100,000 or any other number and come the election, let's take ANC. Now, the beauty about that is the confidence of those people on the constitutional decision of the country. So, that to me is, I find it very exciting whether they use, I mean, even in Mozambique, it was SMS and that's that. So, whether the that just impact on the growth part. I've not looked at the maybe the plant of ore, not too much. Egypt is not a major oil producer. But in fact, it has created a crisis in the Suez Canal to an already existing crisis of crime. Whether that is a threat or an opportunity, difficult to say. Because a number of shipping lines are looking towards the south. So it may not necessarily be a negative thing for now. But as to whether South Africans will take that momentum and anticipate what we should encourage South Africans to do what is right, the constitutional one, if they think we're not doing the right thing, how many parties in South Africa? It's just a good name to choose instead of going to the police. Please name. And that's what I'm saying. I find it difficult. I realize we wanted to buy a house, but this is a problem. But I realize the intention. The intention is to make sure that we don't never have perverse incentives for financial institutions, everybody, to provide unnecessary loans. The job algorithm is the problem of unnecessary loans in the developed world. Decided as a housing bubble. So I wonder if we didn't have the National Credit Act, what would have happened? So I don't have a problem, but I'm saying sometimes you may have a problem at the personal level, but if you look at the global picture, the thing may be different. Look one. you are advocates of capitalism. Unfortunately, I'm not. When you say socialism is not safe, Norberto Bobbio, one of the interesting Italian philosophers, has written an interesting book which is out of trade at the moment. I'm quite willing to give you just a long view of the book. Which socialism? The interesting book is which socialism, because your frame kind of socialism is the kind of socialist you want from socialism. If you look, one of the most effective societies, egalitarian societies in the world, is Sweden. One of the most effective societies in the world is Sweden, and the fundamental socialist, and even the right thing of Sweden is almost closer to the left thing than us. So, that's why I'm saying we may debate those issues, the two of us, around. But I agree with the implementation, it's quite critical. As to the poverty ratios of those kinds of districts, I can't give you the top of my head, but I can give you an interesting figure that since the introduction of the reforms in China by Deng Xiaoping, they've lifted 100 million people out of poverty. That I can provide. I can tell you. So, quite an important point. New cities, I don't know, I must be honest. Look, on this is what I think I was talking about, the funding arrangement aspect of an insurance, because it requires some technical system to say, I don't know why people are not agreeing to it, they must be so much not agreeing to it. On institutionalizing cooperative, the cooperative development agent set up by government, which is intended to address this. I would agree that the definition of the wealthy in South Africa starts from 15,000. Surely, so the growth in making that not that much. if we were starting from 15,000. Secondly, if we were to use 15,000 as a benchmark, you wouldn't have had a 10%. And I wouldn't agree with that. Hassle of doing business, yes and no. I mean, there are cases where we probably hire and cases where we don't hire. And we intend to look into those issues. You may look at the port, but not look at the sea. You buy seeds in South Africa as LME as if we're buying it from London, when you are producing it in front of paper. That's a fundamental challenge. And it doesn't mean that we order the input and all these is not the case. So why are we having such higher price of tea? Which is something that we I would agree with all the things that need to be attended. So lastly, a short motor on Marshall Party Contessa. Look, personal level, I wouldn't have a problem with that. You know, I would appreciate an environment where we come up and say, well, I agree with the job, and do this and this. If that's the ANC is doing it wrongly, we would go to people and fight in front of those people. Or, and more, that's how we to agree on jobs, to agree on what is to be done. And then we can start talking about it. Because we know they are employees, they are comrades to the parliament, and they are corrupt, they are not going to do it, but we agree on the determinant. I know, it's never a proposition, you're going to say something wrong. I don't expect never a proposition. That does not say that it's only the problem in the Western Cape where you no opposition. Yeah, no, we're not giving them a headache enough. We're not giving the DA a headache enough, so that's the point. So, in essence, I would have no problem, because part of building a national consensus is to turn the eyes of the nation in the same direction. It works. I mean, it works well when we change the nation for a couple of months in the same direction during the World Cup. So we'll turn the nation in the same direction and fight over these things that, look, yeah, it's a nice thing, because the ANC can't do it. We can do it better. We agree that's what is going to be done. And somebody said, no, we say the DA is a lack. They won't do it. They can't even do it in the same case in one government. How can they do it in a national scale? So that's part of the fight we should be doing. I would have no incentive message in our favor, although some of the people may not understand it. It works in our favor, the aim is to build that consensus, and everybody, we can even vote that no one else can do it, etc. So, I wouldn't have a problem with that. As I've said to them, Shepherds, that the fundamental issue really is as part of fellow Africans, sometimes we go to say, what is it that this is the above facing party politicians, which is in the national interest, and begin to say, in what is in the national interest, we're all, I think, from the same thing, and continue to knock each other, what the whole time is about. I would not be happy to see them making, because people say that there's a opposition, and they say nothing wrong about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Another colleague, if you're two places, I want to put it for you. There is a choice that we can carry right around and carry on afterwards, but we've got a personal fact is that we won't have our sharp, intelligent deputy minister with us, because we need to go to the NA. They are setting today's president to reply, debate, and there's a three-line work. Just got a message from the Rotary. There's a three-line work from the
know what a state and what is. The other thing is we can go for lunch and we can greet each other. And after Baba goes that time, that we can come. But I don't know how your flight is scheduled to leave today or spend another day in Cape Town. I'm not sure if you have Cape Town. You want to spend another day. But I think, remember, it seems to me that the last choice was choice that was better. That's what I want to go for a few. Okay. Yeah. So, Deputy Minister, let me start by thanking you. You are really convinced. The DA and Pope, you know, so they will go out there and support the new broadcast. Thank you for making it much easier for us, for the sharpness and the effectiveness that you've answered, and also for your time that you've spent with us, Deputy Minister. We really appreciate that. Also for the DG, Professor Levin, Swazi, and most of the other staff of EDD. To the provinces, let me also spell out my heartfelt thanks for showing this interest. You know, this is what the NCOP is all about, because we are delegates from the provinces. We need to look after the provincial interest in the national sphere of government. That's what we mandated us to do. We want to thank you. All the chairpersons of the committees, every single delegate of the provinces and support staff of the provinces, we want to thank you for participating and make this, you know, really a vibrant debate that we had. And there was no necessary need for us to get interdicts and all those types of things. It was all very vibrant and necessary. Thank you very much for the provinces, for the members of the select committee and the staff. Thank you very much for the attendance also, for the vibrancy. And I hope that we can vote. In actual fact, we must vote on this. I think that the other co-chairs of the provinces will agree with me that we should have this once every 3 months, so that EDD can come back and give us progress reports and all those types of things. Do you agree we should have it every 3 months?
Yes.
Okay. The select committee, the provinces say we must have it every 3 months. We will come and visit you also. You don't have to come down to Cape Town all the time. That type of stuff. The Deputy Minister must just be ready, and the PG and also the rest of the team. Ladies and gentlemen, lunch is in the restaurant in the old assembly. Please attend lunch, have lunch, because otherwise the DA can't find fault today, but they will find fault on wasteful expenditure if you don't have lunch. Go and have lunch. Travel safely. Thank you very much. This meeting is definitely